Hello and welcome to a new edition of Full Access Hoops and OTG Basketball Podcast. Be sure to head to otgbasketball.com for all the latest and greatest NBA content right now. We're running a hot take marathon currently, going over a bunch of wild takes by the guys on writing on staff. We also have the podcast network in which we have the Brooklyn Buzz, the Nets Pod, the NBA Outlet, the flagship podcast for OTG, in which I co-host, Just Ball Things, among many other podcasts. Be sure to check that out. With me today, I have Jeffrey from Elite Sports NY, a staff writer and New York Knicks fan covering the Knicks as well. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Corey. Thanks for having me on the pod.
Honestly, thank you. Reaching out and making yourself available. I've been really trying with Full Access Hoops to branch out and bring on other writers. So again, Jeffrey Campbell on the show.
So awesome, now, awesome.
The Knicks, and you know, I don't feel like I'm harsh on the Knicks. Some people are really harsh on the Knicks. The Knicks fans at times can do it themselves. You know, a couple years ago when you guys had Rose, Porzingis, and Melo, and the Super Team comments came out, and people really bought into that. There is a sense of delusion at times. Obviously, I think the Knicks, probably until KD tore his Achilles, were right in play for Durant and Kyrie. Obviously, they didn't get either one of those guys. What was your feeling after this offseason? Obviously, also just missing out on Zion Williamson. There was a lot of hope of getting the number one pick to be able to draft him. They got RJ Barrett, which isn't a bad consolation prize. So how have you felt with the misses in free agency, the getting of RJ Barrett? How do you feel right now with the state of the New York Knicks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty crazy, you know, kind of entire season leading up to free agency. I think if you're a rational Knicks fan, you have to be disappointed. You know, I think overall the direction of the franchise looks promising when you consider the amount of draft picks and young players that we have on the roster. But, you know, and it obviously depends on who you talk to. Knicks Twitter is kind of pretty much split between some people who really just love to bash the franchise at any moment in time, and people who really just look at things through very rose-colored glasses. So it depends on who you talk to, but I think there was definitely a concerted effort from the front office to push the idea that if we build this team organically through the draft, you know, we hire player development guys so to speak, we create enough cap space that people are going to want to come to New York as a big market. And it's something that we've been hearing about for a really long time. So, you know, to see that, at least in print anyway, it seems like KD, you know, didn't take a meeting with anybody basically except the Nets. And I can believe that. I could believe also that, you know, we were in play up until he tore his Achilles. I could definitely believe that. There was so much smoke and really well-established reporters like Zach Lowe, Woj, reporting that, you know, KD was at least very heavily considering the Knicks prior to this summer. So, but I think you have to be disappointed. You know, there's a lot of cap space there, a lot of things that were given up. Kristaps Porzingis no longer a Knick. And we end up with, you know, I'm sure we'll touch on a little bit later, but, you know, some decent, there's definitely an upgrade in talent, but you have to be at the very least a little bit disappointed. But if you turn your head to RJ Barrett, third pick in the draft, a very much an up and down summer league. I think it's pretty common when you get to this point and you're talking about young players that the reactions after a summer league, both, you know, positive and negative, there's always some pretty gross overreactions. But the one thing I like about Barrett is that out of the top five guys picked, he was really one of the few players that actually played in summer league. You know, Zion, and this is no knock on Zion at all, the guy's going to be an absolute stud, but he, you know, he had a knee contusion, and, you know, rightfully so, the Pelicans decided to protect their investment, and they sat him. You know, Darius Garland didn't play. I think DeAndre Hunter did play a little bit after they finally figured out his contract situation. John Morant coming off surgery. I don't think he played. And then Jared Culver, I think the Timberwolves have put out some type of release that they said that they wanted to get him used to the playbook and, you know, whatever that means. So I'll give Barrett credit from this standpoint. The guy seems like a competitor. You know, he seems like he wants to get out there and play any chance he can get. You know, and there's a lot of things to like with him. You know, had almost a triple-double during one of his games. You know, when he is kind of a secondary playmaker, kind of on the side, and he's allowed to attack closeouts, I think he looks really polished and really fluid athletically. But the things that were criticisms of him at Duke and before coming to the NBA, they're still going to be there. You know, defense was shaky, shot selection, decision making, you know, just chucking up shots. That's something that I think you'll see with him, just because he's a guy who has a lot of confidence and he's young. He's going to have to learn the NBA. But, you know, overall, if you're a Knicks fan, you have to be excited. As usual, I think you have to have some tempered enthusiasm. But when it comes to free agency, you have to be disappointed, because I think, you know, we were definitely fed, at least in part, you know, some type of message that we were going to get somebody big, and it didn't happen.
Right, and that's been the at least the story of the last decade for the Knicks, aside from Carmelo Anthony and Stoudemire, probably, and maybe even Tyson Chandler to throw in. I'm personally on the RJ Barrett bandwagon. I actually think that he's more of a lock to have a good career compared to Zion Williamson. Not that I don't think Zion's going to be bad. I'm not so sold on his transition into the NBA as I am Barrett. Yeah, Barrett has his own issues defensively. He can't really play the two as of now. He's more of a three. But I love the going after of RJ Barrett. And now switching over to free agency, because obviously, as we mentioned, they didn't get any big names. But I actually liked what the Knicks did, because once the Knicks realized they weren't going to get Durant or Kyrie, they went after all of, in my opinion, or not all, but majority of the marquee role players that a lot of these, you know, Clippers, Lakers, Bucks, a lot of these teams would have been going after. And Wayne Ellington, Bobby Portis, Taj Gibson, the signing of Julius Randle was more so them getting another young piece to their core. Reggie right. Bullock, Marcus Morris, all of them too on short deals, you know, 1-2 year deals, not a ton of money for a lot of these guys, which makes them very movable in the future. So what were some of your thoughts as the Knicks took like 8 role players right after they missed out on the stars?
Yeah, I think it was a good backup plan. You know, I think if you're looking at, like you said, how you want to build this team in the future, you want to maintain financial flexibility. You want to make sure, that was the other thing that the front office said. They wanted to say that we want to get the right type of free agents that understand what we're doing with the team, that we are going to be playing a lot of young guys. Now it's going to be interesting to see how that works out, you know, because you bring on a guy like Marcus Morris, who I think most likely is going to be penciled into the starting small forward spot on day one. And it's going to be interesting to see how this team does if losing starts to, you know, kind of corrode some of the good feelings and the good vibes that might be surrounding this team, as usually does with the Knicks, you know, prior to the beginning of the season. You know, I think there's a lot of good veteran presence that some of our young guys can learn from. I do like adding Julius Randle specifically. I really like his fit next to Mitchell Robinson. I think Randle is a guy that can score in his sleep. You know, he clearly has to work on defense. But I think the Knicks are actually a really good place for him in terms of his career, because he, with this contract, when he signed the 2-year with the team option for $63 million, I think it was, he got about $8 million raise from his previous contract. I think he's going to be making about $18 million per year. When he ends this contract, he's actually going to be, you know, still within his prime, and I think maybe in a good position, depending on how he plays, for that big 4-5 year deal that he's probably looking for, you know, as a player that still wants to make kind of his name in the NBA. So I like Randle for the Knicks and for him himself. I think the three guys that I like the most besides Randle, or two at least, are Marcus Morris and Bobby Portis Jr. You know, I know that a lot of people criticizing the Knicks moves felt like, well, listen, you got every power forward in the league. You know,
they did get a lot of power forward.
They did.
There is a log jam there, but my thought is Julius Randle probably plays some small ball five next year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. And Fizz, if you saw anything from him in his first year, he is not shy at all about shaking things up. Whether it was smart or not, he played Cantor and Mitchell Robinson together on the floor at times. So he's not going to be afraid to mix up lineups and put people in places, like you said, whether it's a small ball five, or I think Portis could even play some small ball five, and you know, in some areas as well. But the thing I like, I'll say this, and I tend to lean more towards there's a higher chance for combustion, maybe with some of the personalities and the amount of guys that have been brought onto the team, just based on a minutes standpoint. And kind of what I mean by that is when you look at basically everybody that the Knicks brought onto the team, including Elfrid Payton, with the exception of Bullock, who's pretty much going to miss the first month of the season because he just had some type of surgery. But they are all used to be playing at least decent minutes. I think for the last 3 years alone, all of these guys have averaged at least 25 minutes per game. So if you're going to have a rotation that's 10, 11 deep, you know, it starts to get a little dicey with spots 6 through 10 or 6 through 11. There are going to be some guys, you know, that are going to feel like, hey, you know, I'm not, you know, getting my due here, or I've been in the league for a certain amount of time and, you know, people know what I can do. Why am I not getting burned? So it's going to be interesting to see how Fizz manages that. I think that's where he makes his money. He's had a great reputation around the league for being a player's coach, someone that people can depend on in terms of communication. So, you know, I'm interested to see how that plays out. I think it could get a little dicey, but these are also players that I think that other teams around the league are going to look at and say, hey, we could use a Portis on our squad. You know, we could use a Marcus Morris to stretch the floor as well. So, you know, from the standpoint of that, you have an upgrade in talent, potentially good trade assets that can get you, hopefully, maybe a pick. That's the other thing that I think the Knicks are going to really look into, because the whole thing with Enes Kanter, Courtney Lee last year, they were really scouring the league to try and see who would give them a pick for any of these guys. And you ended up having to include Courtney Lee in a deal with Kristaps Porzingis to get, obviously, a nice haul back, including Dennis Smith Jr. But then they scoured the league for anyone who would trade them anything for Enes Kanter, and they ended up buying him out. So I think the Knicks saw that and they said, listen, if we're going to have all of this cap space, you know, not only do we want to add talent to the team and we want to win more games, but we want guys who are going to be targeted at the deadline. Wayne Ellington and Bullock both were targeted at the deadline last year. I think the Pistons picked up Ellington.
Correct,
but so, you know, I think there's a lot of flexibility here with the roster, whether it all comes together in this kind of positionless basketball utopia that, you know, that the Knicks have kind of pushed, and I know Fizz will be about. That kind of remains to be seen, but those three guys specifically, Morris, Randall, and Portis, I really like those additions, and I'm really kind of excited to see how they play in the Garden.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the addition of Marcus Morris. I didn't like how it all went down. You know, him backing out of the Spurs deal was a little bit iffy to me.
Right.
Fired his agent shortly after as well. So that whole thing was messy, but I mean, he's a fantastic player. Well, not, I shouldn't say fantastic, but he's a good role player. But also you mentioned how things could get turbulent for that locker room. And I mean, right there, Marcus Morris and Bobby Portis, both of those guys can get a little bit off keel.
Yeah.
So that definitely is something to keep your eye on. If you're looking at the minute distribution, somebody's going to be on the loose end, on the bad end of getting minutes. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out, because still you have to think, which is what we're going to segue to, is the young guys. This is what it's all about, right? Guys like Kevin Knox, Mitchell Robinson, Julius Randle, Dennis Smith Jr., even Dotson to a degree. You want these guys to be getting the bulk load of those minutes, RJ Barrett. What do you expect from the young core of the Knicks? Because this is realistically what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're at different spots in their developments, you know, depending on how many years they've been in the league. The biggest thing you want to see is growth. You know, a lot of people ask me all the time. They'll say, you know, what do you think is a successful year for the Knicks in terms of wins and losses? And for me, while, you know, I generally put a range of 25 to 30, 32 wins, you know, like that, that to me looks good, right? But for me, what I'd rather have is these kids really start making, you know, growth in their game. To me, the crown jewel, not the crown jewel right now, but at least the guy that I'm most confident will make strides is Mitchell Robinson, just because he doesn't need the ball to be effective. He changes the game just by his size, his length, the way he defends the pick and roll, the way he can close out to shooters, pretty much alter any type of offense, especially when it comes to guards trying to penetrate. He's just really good at that, and he doesn't need a lot of coaching for that. And any article that I've read this year, they really talk, you know, pretty glowingly about his work ethic and the things that he's picking up in the game. He's become more polished in, you know, post-game interviews, stuff like that. Like, I'm the most excited to see Robinson, especially when they start talking about him, you know, getting a little bit of a jump shot, and that the fact that he's trying to work on shooting threes, things like that. For me, I just actually want to see him stay healthy and get and stay out of foul trouble. If he stays out of foul trouble and he gets his ankles right, you know, I think this is really a potential defensive player of the year candidate that we're looking at. Like, I think his talent is that great.
I think of shot blockers, he's up there. I mean, yeah. I think of Embiid, I think of Gobert, I think of Miles Turner. For my Pacers, Mitchell Robinson, Jared Allen, all those tall, lanky centers. I mean, that's actually been an intriguing thing, is just the fact that both New York teams have these decent, very good upside rim protectors in Jared Allen and Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's he changes the game in visible and non-visible ways. The analytics, you know, definitely support that he's a guy that changes the outcome of a game, even if his stat line is not that great.
I think of the moment last year where I kind of felt like he arrived, and he blocked a corner three where he ran out on, or maybe he even stumbled. But it was one of those blocks where he said, wow, this kid's definitely going to be something in this league if he stays healthy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. There's a lot of those highlight reel plays that people can point to for sure. I'd say, you know, another guy besides Mitch, believe it or not, you know, I know a lot of people are going to talk about Barrett, Knox. The guy really besides Mitch that I'm the most excited about is Alonzo Trier. Trier, to me, when I kind of took a deep dive or wrote an article about him, maybe it might have been back in early June, when I really start to look at some of his analytics in terms of shot making and the degrees of difficulty, like, to me, he's really a stud in terms of his ability to make shots off balance, catch and shoot. He was probably the Knicks' best three-point shooter last year in terms of percentage-wise. And there's kind of this notion out there that he's not a good defender. But if you look at the numbers in terms of on- and off-court net rating, his was actually the best next to Mitch in terms of defense, with, you know, him being off the court and the team's defense being affected by it. And, you know, he's the type of guy that his athleticism really kind of translates to offense on the court. He's able to get his shot pretty much at any point in time. You know, obviously, as a young player, he definitely needs to improve on decision making and running the offense out of the pick and roll. But he more so than some of the other guys. Obviously, you know, I really do like Barrett, and I can't wait to see him play this year. But really, from the guys that are coming back from last year, Mitch and Trier are probably the two that I have the most stock in. And obviously, if Dennis Smith Jr. can get his shot right, I think he could have a really good year for them as well.
Now, Trier, is this, he shot 44.8% from the field, 39.4% from three, 10.9 yeah. points per game. That's really solid, 80 from the free throw line. Is this like a six-man potential ceiling? What is the ceiling for Trier?
Well, so I'll be honest. I'm a little high on him. You know, I really think he could be a starting two guard in the league. Just the way that he plays, and just the fact that I really just don't see other defenders really being able to guard him. I think he puts so much pressure on, you know, other, you know, any type of defense, basically. I think now the downside of that is that he can definitely get a little bit of tunnel vision, and he can kind of get into the point where he's, you know, doing kind of his dribbling, and he's, you know, there's 5 seconds coming off the clock and other players are standing around the court. So that's obviously an issue for him as well. But I do like his ceiling as potentially a starting two guard in this league. I think if the Knicks play him a good amount of minutes, he's really going to shine. And even when I was looking kind of down the road of players that are restricted free agents, because that's the other thing, the Knicks are going to have to make a decision on him fairly soon because he's going to be a restricted free agent this upcoming summer. I do think that there's going to be some people that are looking around the league and especially looking at him and will definitely offer him a decent contract. But if you look at some other guards that had similar numbers to him, man, I think before coming up to restricted free agency, some of them were, or it was more of the percentages, but I think guys like Evan Fournier, Malcolm Brogdon were on that list. Now in 2016, I think when Fournier got his contract, that was a crazy free agency. Spending summer. They were pretty insane. And I think he got 5 years, $85 million. And Fournier is not a bad player at all. And I like Brogdon a lot. But, you know, I do think that he's going to get, you know, a fair contract for sure. It's obviously going to be how this year plays out. But I like his talent level a lot. And he's got that killer instinct. He kind of has that no fear, you know, kind of way about him. Right. I think it's going to play out.
Definitely got to keep your eye on. Now, the point guard position, I think, is really intriguing for the Knicks. Basically, because I just don't know what the hell the plan is. Obviously, Dennis Smith Jr. is the ideal guy to take over the reins. Wasn't great, obviously, when he became a New York Knick last year in the trade. Had some nice dunks and had a couple flashy moments, but shot, you know, 41% from the field, 28.9% from three.
Yeah.
Frank Ntilikina just doesn't really get any playing time. Do not plays. I want to have your thoughts on that in a second. And now you bring in Elfrid Payton into the mix, who actually didn't have a bad year for New Orleans. Did get banged up a little bit, but he definitely had a nice bounce back year from his half season with the Phoenix Suns. So what are some of your thoughts on the uncertainty, I should say, of this point guard position right now?
Yeah, it's very much up in the air. I think if you take anything from the way Fizdale used the point guards last year, he's very, very much supportive of guards who can drive in the paint. I mean, you know, most Knicks fans will tell you that, hey, it was nice that, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay, I guess, proved in a kind of make or break year for him that, okay, I guess he can be in the NBA, probably a little bit of a nauseating barrage of mid-range attempts from him. But, you know, he's an okay backup guard. The Jazz picked him up. I think a lot of Knicks fans really wanted to see Frank get a really fair share in terms of being able to either run the offense as the lead guard for the Knicks, or at least have some substantial time off the ball, you know, in the two or three spot. Because as a defender, you know, similar to Mitch, I mean, I think there was a stat after his rookie year, Ntilikina was the number one guard again in terms of guarding the pick and roll, in terms of like points per possession. So, you know, but the biggest thing with him is it's always going to be his shot. It's going to be his offense, whether he, you know, you see him working out in the summer and he's playing for France right now. And I think he's had some decent games, but the thing is going to be whether he can be aggressive and his offensive game, does it translate? Does it come kind of full way? Because he's, you know, he can obviously impact the game on the defensive end, but he just, you know, he struggles to be aggressive and find his spots. And it also depends on kind of how you evaluate him too. If your idea of success for Frank is this guy who's going to average 10 to 15 points per game, you know, that I don't know that that's going to be him, you know, but I think he could have a really nice role in an NBA team as a lockdown defender. If he can just hit the open three, I mean, he would be far more valuable and I think would see a lot more minutes. But even with that, I think one of the very fair fit criticisms of Fizdale last season is that I don't think he gave Frank really that that fair shake or that ability to kind of, okay, let's give him 18, 20 games at the point. You know, we're winning 17 games this year. Like, really, you know, we have to see what we have out of our lottery picks. So in terms of Dennis Smith Jr., I mean, I think when he came from Dallas, the one thing I'll say in terms of a positive about his play, or two things, I did like the chemistry he seemed to develop with Mitchell Robinson. They definitely seem to have an understanding in the pick and roll in terms of timing. But it's always going to be about, you know, for Smith, it's going to be about his shot, but it's also going to be about, does he do little things that a point guard can do to impact the game positively? Does he understand how to run an offense? I think he's very, very adept at getting into the paint. He can score in traffic. He can absorb contact. I think he's got amazing, amazing skills. And I'll never, ever, ever take, you know, the video, the summer, you know, working on your shot and all that. But I will say this, it looks better because during the year, he had a very clear hitch in his shot, especially at kind of at the highest point of his release. That at least looks a little bit more fluid. But listen, like any rational person would say, I think you got to see that for 82 games against an NBA defense. And Peyton, I like the addition of Peyton. The only issue, and it's kind of an issue that I think some Knicks fans have with some of the additions on the team is, you know, if Peyton eventually kind of beats out, which I could see happening, he beats out Smith Jr. or Ntilikina, how does that affect the development of our young guys? And listen, if these guys don't pan out, how does it affect their trade value? Because, you know, essentially one of the criticisms also is that Frank Ntilikina's trade value is at an all-time low right now. I mean, the Knicks were at least reported to have shopped Ntilikina last year to see what they could get for him, maybe another pick before the draft, but he didn't play. So, you know, it's kind of tough to really see where some of these guys are going to be, and especially with some of the signings that we made. You know, I could totally see a world where Elfrid Payton beats out both Smith Jr. and Ntilikina for a starting point guard spot. So then what does that mean? You know, what does that mean for Dennis Smith Jr.? Because you traded Kristaps Porzingis for a package that was ultimately cap space, him, and draft picks in the future. And, you know, if Smith Jr. doesn't at least get the chance to show what he is or isn't, you know, that's also kind of like a big issue for the front office.
No, definitely. It's going to be interesting to see how this point guard situation developed throughout the year. Now that we've wrapped up what's happened in the offseason, what the roster looks like to a degree, what are your actual expectations on this NBA season? I've seen some people have the Knicks as an 8th seed. I've seen some people have the Knicks, you know, basically in the bottom of the barrel for the lottery again, and some of them having them right in the middle of the East, like the 10 seed range, 11 seed range. What do you expect from the Knicks?
I'll say this, you know, just to kind of, I guess, piggyback on the player we were just talking about. I do think a lot of it, if Dennis Smith Jr. does develop some semblance of a reliable jump shot, I think that can go a long way towards making the Knicks, to me, and it's funny, I don't want to say this in a completely negative way, but it goes a long way towards making them watchable for the entire season. Like, I've definitely seen reports that say, oh, I think they could sneak into the 8th seed. You know, if that happens, you know, that'd be great. I don't personally see it. My gut feeling tells me that with teams like the Atlanta Hawks that I think will definitely look to be better, I think some of those outside, you know, the 10 to 12 teams from last year in the Eastern Conference, I think they'll be better. Even the Chicago Bulls, who are in a very, very weird, I wouldn't say weird place in their development, but I was very interested to see, the coach's name is escaping me right now, but how they kind of transitioned from Hoiberg to him. And they have Laurie
Boland.
Yeah. Boylan. So I think, you know, I think they'll be better. You know, Lauri Markkanen had a really good rookie year. The Bulls, I didn't watch Wendell Carter Jr. too much last year, but
he missed a ton of time with injuries.
Yeah, so, you know, but I know a lot of people leading up to the draft were really high on him as a stretch four, stretch five. So, you know, I think even the Bulls will look better. My personal feeling is I think the Knicks will hover around the 12 to 14 spot for the majority of the year. Like I was saying earlier, I think if they can get anywhere from around 25 to 32 wins, I think – and the young guys are showing visible steps that they're getting better, and Fizz is kind of getting these guys to buy into the plan, and maybe you flip one of these free agent signings for a pick or two in the next upcoming draft. To me, that's success, because everything for the Knicks to me comes back to, are they doing things that a responsible NBA franchise does? You know, are they developing and growing their players? Are they keeping financial flexibility? Are they, you know, trying to gain draft picks? To me, as long as we're doing that, I don't focus as much on the win total, but I do think they'll hover around the 12 to 14 spot. And at the end of the day, all of these fans want is for them to play hard and be watchable. You know, I think Fizz, for the most part, kept the guys playing hard last year, but there were some games that were absolutely dreadful to watch. But I think if you look at recent rebuilds, especially if you look at the 76ers and the whole trust the process era, I mean, you know, there were years where they won. I think I was looking at their record. They won back to back like 16 games or something. I mean, there was a lot of years where they were just bad. The Michael
Carter Williams era was certainly a bad stretch for them. I mean, that's how the rebuilds go, though, right? You either get the Phoenix Suns, where you're kind of just spiraling in the same place, or you get the Atlanta Hawks rebuild, for example. I think even though this is impossible for the Knicks fan base, but the best expectation probably for Knicks fans to have is to have no expectation.
Yeah.
Go in with the thought of you have a bunch of young guys and a bunch of vets, and just like you said, let these guys play. The win total doesn't matter. You just want to see guys taking steps forward. Does Kevin Knox get a little bit more efficient? Does Dennis Smith Jr. find a jump shot? It's those little things that you want to see in year two and year three of your rebuild. Because now we're officially in the middle of the Knicks rebuild. Probably year three would be if I had to. Well, I mean, it depends on what you think about the Porzingis trade in terms of the rebuild. But they're definitely in the middle of one.
I think most fans are going to kind of. Because it's interesting, too. So Mills came on the year before Scott Perry and Fizz came on. I think a lot of fans attach Perry and Fizz together and say, okay, that first year, meaning last season, was kind of that big, you know, beginning year of the rebuild. But you brought up Knox, and he was somebody that I kind of forgot to mention here. And he's someone that I'm really, really interested in to see kind of what steps he takes this year as well.
I'm huge on him. I love his length. I love his size. I think defensively he's already going to be a problem. It's just, can he get more consistent on the offensive end?
Yeah. So like any kind of major NBA guy, I wouldn't say any, but there are some guys that I've listened to that really think, there was someone who was on Howard Beck's podcast, I think David Thorpe, who's kind of been an NBA guy for a while. He's a huge Kevin Knox guy. He thinks he has all-star potential. I like Knox a lot, and I do think that I know there was a lot of articles that said analytically he was one of the worst basketball players last year, efficiency-wise. I mean, he was tough, but you know, it's a convenient defense, but he literally just turned 20. I think it was like yesterday or a couple of days ago.
Right.
I mean, you know, and he's got these skinny little chicken legs, but I mean, he's 6'9". His length is great. I will say this, the one thing that was encouraged, and you never want to take too much from summer league, but he had a good summer league last year too, to be fair. But what I saw a little bit different this time around, because it seemed like he was more comfortable knowing where to score from in the offense. And I like that a lot. He seemed way more decisive and aggressive with his moves. And he seemed very, very, very comfortable shooting the corner three, which I think the thing is about him, a skill that he already has really, really he's adapted pretty well to. He's a very good catch and shoot shooter, even though the numbers may not support it. And I think actually guys like Dennis Smith Jr., Alonzo Trier, RJ Barrett, guys that are going to get into the teeth of the defense, kick out to him. If he just gets consistent, because his stroke is pure. I mean, he looks like a very pure and fluid shooter. Even off the dribble to an extent too. I think it's just, everything is going to be a consistency about him. But I'm interested. I'm very interested to see how he does.
For sure. Now, obviously, we've covered a lot about the New York Knicks. There's a ton of change in the NBA overall this offseason. We saw like 10 stars switch teams. What are some players, some teams across the league that have your interest as we enter this next season?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about this season. Every NBA junkie is, but I do think that there's going to be a little bit more parity. Unfortunately, obviously, with the Warriors losing KD and obviously Klay Thompson to injury, but some guys that I really like. It's a mixture of young guys, kind of in the middle tier of their development. Or maybe just a guy in a new place. De'Aaron Fox, absolutely love. I really, really can't wait to see what this year looks like for him. Kind of the Kings, too, a little bit. But just a guy that really just seems to be coming into his own. I know he had a really good year last year.
And killing it, apparently, for Team USA. He's been one of the standouts, which obviously bodes well for him as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's got a star makeup, and I like his mentality. He seems aggressive, doesn't seem to shy away from big moments. So I'm looking for a lot of big things from him. Also, another guy, I touched on him like really, really briefly, but just a guy in a new place, Malcolm Brogdon on the Pacers. Like, I love that sign for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Pacers fan.
Okay.
Yeah, so for me, when we were actually recording live when that happened.
Oh, wow.
Because the rumors were the Pacers were going to get Ricky Rubio, and right. I was dead against that because he's just not a floor spacer. And I thought Brogdon had more upside, especially defensively, in the fact that he had like 50-40-90 split last year.
Yes. Yes.
And obviously they got him. Slight overpay, but they had to. But yeah. Brogdon should fit right in. And once Victor Oladipo comes back, that backcourt should be really fun to watch. I'm drooling at the thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as a Knicks fan, I'm always going to have
we have to figure out the past.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'll always have that gut reaction towards any type of Pacers success. But I'm not going to lie, I really like their team. I know a lot of people have talked about, well, how are you eventually going to, and I'll be honest, I haven't looked too deeply into it, but a lot of people have talked about the pairing of Sabonis and Turner, what that looks like, how it turns out. But I really like their team a lot. McMillan seems really sharp. I think that franchise, you know, in the wake of post Paul George, has really done everything they could to turn things around and keep fans really, really just, obviously excited for the team.
Yeah, the doomsday dark days following the Paul George trade didn't last long. I know it was, it's weird. You get rid of your superstar, you just don't expect to be relevant so quickly. And obviously, Victor Oladipo had that major jump right away and thankfully just took off. But it's been nice to be on that side of things, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, it's true. I'm trying to think also some other guys, just I'll try and run through a couple of them. Jonathan Isaac on the Magic. He was a guy that I really wanted the Knicks. He might have been selected before Ntilikina, but he came out in Ntilikina's draft. Love that guy's length. I know he had a decent year for the Magic last year. Pascal Siakam is the main guy in Toronto. I'm really interested to see how that turns out just because, I mean, to me, he was an absolute stud during the year and in the playoffs as well. I think he's really, really going to be good. Also, just the meshing of Al Horford and Embiid on the 76ers. Very interested to see how that turns out. I think even in I don't want to say twilight of his career, but Horford isn't getting younger, but he's still a really good defensive player and probably one of the best screeners out there. So I think there's some, obviously there's, you know, advantages to having that on your team, but I'm interested to see how they mesh together.
And yeah, I mean, they come out with like a monster lineup. Their shortest guy is 6'6" and Jason Richardson. I mean, we haven't seen that kind of height, especially lately in the NBA. That team's monstrous.
Yeah, and I think, at least from what I heard, it sounded like Horford was really an insurance also for Embiid's minutes, you know, not just ballooning over like 40 every game, especially in the playoffs. The other thing too, I mean, as a Knicks fan, and you know, there's always that jilted X feeling when a player leaves you. But I am interested to see how Porzingis and Luka Doncic play this year. If Porzingis, you know, plays over 65, 70 games and they look decent, I mean, that's going to be a real, pretty serious combo going forward. That's probably one of the other things I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, what the Mavericks have is interesting. You know, a couple of nice role players alongside Doncic and Porzingis, and possibly you have two stars now for the next decade or more to make a run at with. You know, Dallas played smart. And actually, I'm intrigued to know, how did you feel about the whole Porzingis situation? Because I'm always interested to know what Knicks fans feel. Because some people obviously play the "I don't really care if you don't want to be here, so be it." And then, you know, there's obviously some people feel otherwise. So how did you feel on the Porzingis demanding a trade and getting his way out of New York?
Oh boy, that could be a podcast in and of itself. But there's a lot there. Like I think. I'll say this. I think, like, you know, early parts of KP's career, I think you could start to see, and it's always tough to judge, like, what level of entitlement in an athlete or what level of confidence in an athlete, you know, teeters over on the edge of it's bad for the team or this guy's a me guy, or is it just, well, you know, that's how he has to think. He's one of the best players in the world and he has to believe that he's the best out there. But I think you started to see with some comments in the media from his brother, specifically his agent, Giannis, that they were kind of crafting this, not exit all along, but there was an issue I remember really clearly with the whole Melo situation before Melo got traded out. And there was I guess you could say, you know, translation, however this comes out, but the Giannis was quoted in terms of talking about how Melo left the Knicks, and basically he was talking about Phil, and he was saying that, you know, we didn't really like the way that he was going about business, and he actually said he was like, we wanted Melo to put more of his star power, you know, kind of on the table and get Phil out earlier, which is like, again, that's not like a verbatim quote, but if you read between the lines, it's kind of what he was saying. And it kind of dovetails with some of his behavior, because think about it this way, like Porzingis, and I was not a Phil guy at all when he came to the Knicks. I thought he really, really struggled. The guy knows more, has forgotten more basketball than I know. So I'll never judge his legacy at all, but it just didn't work out for a lot of reasons. But I do think some of them land on his table just in terms of his just kind of being stubborn in terms of the triangle and wanting to do things a certain way. But like, you just don't see a lot of players not show up to an exit interview. And like Porzingis, you know, even Melo, when he like didn't have, you know, good issues with, you know, some of these teams that he hasn't been on or whatever, yeah, showed up to his exit interview, or like most of the players did. Porzingis was just like, nah, you know, screw that, I'm out.
Yeah.
So, you know, you started to see little things bubbling up. And then, you know, going into this year, and this is, I think, starting to become a big trend around the league, the narrative of, oh, you know, as a player, I like my own personal medical staff better, and, you know, I don't necessarily like the opinions of the team's medical staff. So you started to see some issues, I think, with the Knicks and Porzingis about, you know, where is he recovering, whether it's like Real Madrid or, you know, where are we at this stage in the development? And then to me, the weirdest thing about the KP situation, and this is a more of a comment on players in just in general, of how just sensitive they are. I mean, when Fizdale comes out in the media, and at least to me, seems to make a pretty innocuous statement about where KP is in his development. He says, oh, he's not sprinting right now, or yeah, he's not running. And then KP takes to social media and puts a picture of him sprinting, and he goes, that's bullshit. Like, you know, yeah, I feel
was,
like
that was interesting.
Yeah, like I just feel like you could have just called your coach up and said, hey, coach, listen, you know, next time you make a public comment about me or whatever, just, you know, try and consult me first or whatever. But that's this kid, though. And you know, I just started to see more and more, like, things just change. And so then when he goes to the front office and he says, you know, listen, we want out, turns out the Knicks were already surveying deals for him anyway. And they were, okay, listen, you want out? And then he gave them a list. He was like, I want to go to the Nets. And they're like, no, you know what? We're going to send you to the Mavericks. So there's always two sides to a story. And on the flip side, I don't think, you know, you can always say, well, listen, KP is a star talent. What did your franchise do to make him want to stay? You know, he had continuous losing seasons, a failed plan of Melo, Rose, you know, Porzingis super team, you know, whatever you want to call it.
He hasn't been anything, just to cut out, hasn't been anything overly special yet. Like, he's had some moments, but if you look at the numbers, he isn't looking like a for sure superstar or star. He's got potential, but we haven't really seen any of that come together yet. So the fact that he would even, you know, the fact that people think that he would leverage the fact that the Knicks weren't winning, like, you're a rookie. Like, this is kind of how it goes, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and so and that's a big piece of it. I mean, you know, pre knee injury, he had like a 30 game stretch where he was really hot. I mean, he was turning the league up. But no, I mean, listen, I agree with you. I think some of his behavior is superstar like without the superstar accomplishments or accolades. So I'm interested to see how that develops in a place like Dallas, where Mark Cuban is, you know, he's not a shy guy at all. And, you know, it seems like he, obviously we could talk about things that happen off the court with that franchise and, you know, some of the negative stuff that's going on, but I don't know, especially with a very seasoned coach like Rick Carlisle, if they'll kind of put up with some stuff like that. But you know, there's blame to go around. I'm not going to throw this all at KP, the Knicks. They're, you know, a guy that writes for my site, you know, very astutely pointed out that he said, you know, no one has ever turned down the rookie max extension, which for KP would have amounted to be, I think it just exactly what he signed with Dallas, the 5-year $158 million. And basically he was like, listen, if you're the Knicks, you know, give him that, make him turn that down, because they were saying that he was threatening to just sign the qualifying offer and then make himself an unrestricted free agent. Now, you could say coming off an injury, I mean, that's a huge risk. And to me, I think it's also a huge risk to sign a guy who's flatly said, we don't want to be here, you know? So
yeah.
What is that going to look like? Is he going to now play the Anthony Davis? Oh, you know what? My shoulder's kind of hurt. You know, I don't think I'm going to play, you know, this, that, you know, that there's no kind of, I don't want to overblow this because I think most players are professionals, but there's no telling what that I think could do to a locker room, you know, to a coaching staff that's trying to really get 15 guys to buy in and say, listen, this is what we're doing. This is what the plan is. So I think the Knicks made the right decision. I just don't know. Certainly after the first summer, you'd have to feel a little nervous about, you know, what this is going to look like in the future. But you know, I think they made the right call. It's just a matter of how you develop your guys and how you utilize those draft picks going forward.
Definitely. And time will only tell that.
Yeah.
So we went a little bit over the mark of where I expected this pod to go, but this had some great New York Knicks content on it. Jeffrey Campbell, where can the people find you?
Oh, yeah, man. So, yeah, just on my Twitter handle is Jeff Boyard. I think it's Jeff_Boy_RD. Do a lot of writing for the good folks at Elite Sports NY, so you can definitely check them out as well, and pretty much just on Twitter whenever.
Definitely. Jeff, thanks so much for hopping on the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWALHoops, KWAL Hoops. Be sure to follow this podcast on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio and on Twitter at Full Access Hoops, and check out the brand at otgbasketball.com. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.
Thanks a lot for having me on.